Ladies and gentlemen, Overtime 127, Mark Bland, Justin Deming, at DimeOfo on Twitter.
And Instagram.
Wow, you came in a little hot on that one, buddy.
Oh, yeah, baby. DeyeMofo. Tweet hard.
Tweet hard. The enabler.
Yes.
We had a friend of ours named Matt Kruger that was just on the show, old co-host of mine, and he had to jump. So we are doing the overtime here by ourselves. I've got a few questions here that were thrown our direction, and I figured that we could answer some of these questions during the overtime.
Okay.
Something fun for us to do.
Let's go for it.
Do you think essential services... Oh, wait. No. I'm sorry. If you had... Let me ask this question. If you had a terminal illness and had the option of being tossed into a black hole, would you take it? So the idea is that black holes exist. They have found one that they have under control. And for no price, just the experience of being tossed into a black hole because you have a terminal illness, would you, knowing that you are going to die anyway, would you be willing to take the chance to be thrown into a black hole?
No.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think I'd want my body crushed to the size of a molecule or whatever happens.
I mean, I see your point. I mean, that's going to be a very painful way to die. But then again, depending on the terminal illness, that could be pretty painful too.
Good point. It's hard to put myself in that mindset because I really don't want to die.
Yeah, I really don't want to die either. But then again, I know the inevitable is the inevitable. I understand.
Guess it's one thing guaranteed.
I would say no, not me. I'm not going to go black hole.
We've all got a one-way ticket.
We do have a one-way ticket. The highway to hell. That's what it's called. Mark. I am a high school student that takes great interest in radio and podcasting. I really enjoy your discussions, and I wanted to ask, should students be allowed to eat in class? I was reprimanded for it the second to last day of school, and I am very much thinking there's nothing wrong with it. What do you think? Eating in class.
that didn't go the direction the way it started. I thought it was going to be about a different topic. And then I'm a fan of the show. I really want to get into radio and podcasting. So isn't it weird I can't eat in class?
That's a good point. I didn't even think about that. But but you're right.
Quite
a
turn there.
I think that the reason that they don't allow people to eat in class is just because there's so many people with different etiquette ways about them. Not everybody's going to be the clean one who throws away their wrappers and things like that. I don't think that there's necessarily a problem with eating in class.
There are people with different etiquette ways about them, as you've eloquently stated. Really what it is there's a time and a place for everything. Like, the act of eating, of getting out food and eating in class, is disruptive to the purpose of class.
Right.
You know, no one's during lunch. No one's trying to teach you anything.
That's a good
during
point.
Class, like, no one should eat.
What if there was a teacher that hit me up and was like, "You know what? I just got kids eating in my class all the time. Do you think it's okay if I go and teach during lunch? Like, if I just like started like, you know, getting on my soapbox during lunch and explaining things to these kids?"
I mean, don't get me wrong. I get where, you know, God, I'm hungry and I've got these fruit snacks. Why can't I just, you know, there is something about like, it can feel arbitrary.
It can feel very arbitrary.
And in a large sense, it is, because people have to make rules across the board so that everyone falls under them. And yet, then it becomes, there's not that wiggle room.
This next question, I think, is going to be a very interesting one for you and me. Because we like to get into the little discussions, and I think that we're on the opposite sides.
I'm hungry now after that.
I understand. You want Waffle House.
Or?
You want some Waffle House, don't you?
Some hash browns. Oh,
some WH. Some WH. It's where you can play your Waffle House theme song.
Special leader.
Oh, yeah.
Waiting for me at the Waffle House.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
So, Marco Rubio. We know who Marco Rubio is. He said it should be legal to fire someone for being gay. What do you guys think? I think that a company in our state right now, not the state of Missouri, but in the state of our union in 2013, I think that companies are privatized for the most part. Those companies should be allowed, and we've had this argument during the smoking discussions that we had on another overtime a few episodes ago. I think that what it comes down to at this point is complete discretion of the individual that runs the company. I don't know if you're kind of hedging on a line there at that point of being prejudiced to an extent, but I don't know if that prejudice should be controlled by those individuals. Like, they should be allowed, if you're gay, to fire you. Like, Missouri's an at-will state. If you don't trim your beard up or whatever, any company in the state of Missouri has the ability at any time to fire you for whatever reason they want to. They could say, oh, well, you know, we don't like the fact that you have too many tattoos. Or they could say, hey, you wore, you know, you wear orange shirts all the time, and that's not company policy, so you're fired for that. You know, those are all legitimate reasons that they can get away with, and they will do that quite often in this state to get rid of people. I think that this kind of runs along the same lines, although it tends to have a little bit more of an edge to it.
See, an edge to it. Let me define that edge a little bit. You're talking about behaviors people engage in, or uniform or personal grooming choices, versus who you are.
Well, like, the only the rule is the same no matter saying, how the rules applied the same way no matter what the reason is what I'm pointing at.
So you think you're kind of against the Civil Rights Act that says you can't fire someone for being black?
No, I'm not against the civil rights thing at all. I understand the moral justifications for what they're doing, and I think that that should never be a predominantly main reason for why somebody should or shouldn't be fired. I think when it comes to a company, firing should literally always be based upon performance. Mm-hmm. Always. Unless it's a person who has become a problem child for that company. Like, they create an atmosphere that is negative to the business or the making of money. Then that is a good reason to get rid of somebody also. But for the majority of time, I think it should be based on performance, not on personal opinion.
Okay.
Now,
But then, is it okay for a private employer to fire someone based on race, or not have hiring practices that preclude people of a certain race?
Hey, listen, it kind of runs down the same long lines as abortion does for me, because I'm pro-choice. You know, people who are pro-choice are not pro-death. They're just not going to give somebody the scarlet letter for making the decision to have an abortion. We would rather them choose life every single time. But if they did choose to abort the baby, we're obviously going to be in a position of, okay, we're just not going to chastise you and, you know, beat you up about it. There's no reason to do that, because it's a situation we can't fix. We can't go back and change it. You know what I'm saying? And the same kind of token, if a guy wants to fire somebody from his company because they are black, should he have the right to do that? Yes, he should have the right to be able to say, I don't want someone working here because they are black. Now, does that mean that that should be the overarching moral standard that everybody should attribute to or try to get to? No, I don't think that that's the truth by any means. But at the same point, if the guy wants to sue because he feels that you're being prejudiced, I'm not going to stop him either. You know, I'm not going to stop him from going, you're a prejudiced piece of crap, and you deserve to get sued for this, and I'm going to try to take your money from you for it.
He doesn't have a basis to sue if we don't have legal standing that say that's discriminatory.
You have a good point there. Like, it's a tough gray area for me. It's a very tough gray area, because I'm very big into the rights of a private business owner to make the decisions to run their business the way they see fit, which literally has no boundaries to an extent when it comes down to the idea of making money. Because a business by nature is supposed to make money. Now, if they feel that they have an establishment in a mostly white area and they have a black waiter, and I'm just using this as a complete hypothetical, but I'm sure it's happened in the past. They have a black waiter and they seem to get more complaints because they're like, hey, you know, we like your restaurant and stuff, but we're kind of uncomfortable because we're just prejudiced, racist douchebags, and we don't want to come here because you employ a black waiter. Okay, and like I said, it's a hypothetical. Mm-hmm. For him to turn around and go to the black waiter and go, listen, I'm going to have to let you go because there is a physical decline in my profit basis, like the ability for me to make money, and I'm getting a lot of complaints, and that's not good word of mouth, and that's going to filter out, regardless of the horrible prejudices of these individual ignorant idiots that are coming there to buy product from this individual. I've got to sit there and go, if he's going to lose money for it, like, just like you, if you had a beer that was making people sick, and I mean, I know that this seems a little like apples to oranges type thing, but if you got a beer that's making people sick, even though you're a bar, you go turn to that company that you've been doing business with for a long time. You say, listen, you know, we've been getting a lot of complaints about your beer. It's making people sick. We're not going to longer going to do business with you guys. We're not going to buy it. Regardless of how good of a relationship you've had with them, you're going to side on behalf of your company being able to maintain their quality.
Because the minority is making people sick.
Well,
I wanted to go with that,
but that's fine.
No, I mean, the compare you said, you gave me, it's apples to oranges, and that's why there's a difference between a defective product and, you know, a person in your employ. And actually, I can tell you, Mark,
but
I have a family member.
But perception is from the other side.
This has literally occurred with, who moved to another area to work with a new company, had employees that were actually various minorities, and had several customers in this geographic region, and I'm being intentionally vague, but approach this person because they were in imaginative capacity and say, you know, all these minorities working here makes me uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
I had a situation with a place I was working at where there was a gentleman who was coming in there and people found out that he was on Missouri CaseNet as well as the sex offenders list because of pedophilia, because he had been brought up on charges. He was never guilty. You know, he was never charged as that individual, but because he was brought up on charges and because the situation went down the way it did, he had to actually register for the sex offenders list.
But, you know, without...
And they, because he was just on the sex offenders list, people complained to the owner of this restaurant. And the owner of that restaurant made a decision on his own behest. Okay, he could have easily said, listen, to the individual that was coming in there, who had been coming in there for years, this gentleman, he was a decent guy, but he, you know, the stuff he was accused of was molestation. It wasn't just light in, like he was peeing in public and somebody made him, you know, it was legitimate stuff.
I want to talk about that in a second.
But it was legitimate stuff. And, you know, the owners decided to side with him and said, you know, he's a patron. He's not doing any of those things here. He's not doing any. And if it makes you feel uncomfortable that we allow this individual, just because you know this secret about this individual, even though it's public knowledge, you know this and other people don't, we're not going to tell him he can't spend his money here and not come here. That's completely that business owner's decision. And if he wanted to defend his company that way, so be it. So I saw fit for that. And that was great. That was to the sex offender's benefit. But if he would have turned to the same sex offender and been like, hey, listen, you know, we've had quite a few complaints. We found out that you were on the sex offenders list and people are not willing to spend their money here anymore. You know, and a lot of it, I think, comes down to how much money they're making. You know, when you're making great money and you don't have to worry about how many people are coming, you can make decisions that can be small bumps in the road.
Well, but again, and not to call you out or indicate anything about your intentions here, but look at the examples you have to give and the metaphors you have to draw. First, you know, a beer that's making someone sick. Now, like a pedophile or not, a molester, someone with sexual assault.
You view the situation from the perception.
But just to someone being born of a certain color or a certain sexual orientation, something that they cannot control.
Right, of course.
Versus, and you can't draw a comparison to that that's non-discriminatory.
Hey, what I'm trying to point out here.
Let me talk. Having anti-discrimination in the law protects the employer as well as the employee, because the fact of the matter is companies can't be hide behind that whole, oh, we're not prejudiced, but we have prejudiced customers, so we're afraid of offending their prejudice, so we just can't hire minorities,
and
we're going to fire minorities.
I want this to come off right, because I'm not trying to sit there and defend prejudice. I'm trying to separate myself personally. My beliefs are for anti-discrimination, okay? I have no problem with calling a person a bigot, a racist, or whatever like that if they are truly showing those colors. Like, I am against those individuals. Those are bad people. I do agree with that. At the same point, it's not about me personally. It's about the overall system and how the rules should apply down the street, like all the way down from the top down, not just what Mark believes or what Justin believes, but what everybody across in the majority believes. And if the majority is siding this direction, even though I might personally have a feeling over here, I think that you have to kind of go with that's our society. We're built on a majority rule.
We're not built on mob rule, though. We're built on individual liberties and rights. that should be protected. And like, it's I don't think it's right that we have this whole segment of society that says like, oh, if you're not high achieving, it's because you're lazy and not hardworking, and this is capitalism and you got to earn money and blah, 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 blah. But then we're going to turn around and say, oh, you're gay? Well, we have the right to make sure you can't work anywhere just because you're gay or just because you're black or just because of whatever. Like, it's such a contradictory argument. And, you know, the fact of the matter is we've made a lot of progress as a society that gets us to a point where someone can say, like, oh, well, hey, maybe it should be a business owner's decision or this or that. But racism didn't lose a lot of its power on its own. There were some very hard-fought battles for, I mean, really as long as America has been around, but even just from the civil rights movement to now, to protect the civil liberties of people. And now we're at an age in our society where we're talking about protecting the civil liberties of people who are gay. We're still having the conversation in our country. We're still at that point in history where we're trying to figure out that gay people are people.
Right.
You know?
That's a very young fight that we've been having over the last 20 years. It's a very young fight, and it's going to be going on for another 50 years. I really do believe that. I don't think that we're going to get to... I think that we've made massive strides to help homosexual partners achieve more within the society based off of what they're dealing with.
But my point is, it doesn't happen on its own. And we didn't get to where we were with civil rights on its own. Some laws needed to be enacted and in place. And I think this is the thing where, like, I'm glad we're at a point in our country where you can't say, we will not hire non-whites.
Fair enough.
But we need to get to a point where people can't so easily say, we will not hire gay people. Or if we find out you're gay, we'll fire you.
Right.
Which does happen in
our
country.
More often than people think. What is one thing that violates public etiquette that just pisses you off to no end? I'm going to say picking up dog poop when you're walking your dogs or leaving it. When you are walking your dogs, I've had this problem in my neighborhood multiple times. People walking their dogs, then I go start mowing the grass, and I've got like 20 different little bombs because I'm on a corner around the edge of my street. And so, like, as I'm walking around, it's some of it's fresh, some of it's old, some of it's crusty, some of it's dry. But none of you picked up your dog poop. I have a real issue with that. That's a public etiquette thing. That's one of those things where you should, as a public etiquette, pick up your dog's poop. It's not my problem. I don't have dogs. If I had dogs and your dog's pooping on my lawn, and that's great. Maybe I could tell it's mine. Maybe I can't. I don't know. But when I don't have a dog at all and your dogs are pooping on my lawn and you're not picking it up, you're just like, my kids are running in that yard. They might step into it or fall into it, whatever. Like, I didn't buy the house for you to have your dog poop on it. That's all I'm saying. So that's my public etiquette thing. What about you?
Just off the top of my head, I'll do two things right off the top of my head. The way people drive is so ridiculous.
Okay.
The way I travel a lot. I'm on the highways all the time. The people that are cutting in and out of lanes of traffic, like, look, you're not in that big of a hurry, you know, not to risk your own life and certainly not to risk mine and those of everyone that happens to be driving in the vicinity.
Oh, and we had a situation with Jeremy when he left a couple episodes ago from the station. Poor Jeremy. He's driving along at home on his way home after dropping me off, and all of a sudden he passes a car that's on fire on the side of the road. So about 40 yards past that car, him and the other person are just driving along like normal. The person in front of him just slams on their brake. Well past the fire, not looking at the fire or anything like that, just slams on the brake, and Jeremy right into the back end of him.
Mm-hmm.
Horrible. Just crappy driving.
And specifically, people in their big SUVs or trucks that have to drive so aggressively because they're in such a big vehicle. It's ridiculous.
Little man's complex. Small penis.
Just freaking...
Diesels.
Turn signals diesels. Exist. Use them.
I call
them. Use them when
diesels.
You're changing lanes. Be aware of people. Don't be such a self-entitled jerk.
You know another one that I really hate, and I'm going to throw this on there just because it kind of irks me, and I've talked about this on the show before, is neighbors that are loud and noisy with their parties, especially if they have a lot of parties. That's a public etiquette thing. Like, that's where, okay, you live in a subdivision. It's 11:30 at night. On a Friday or Saturday, I can understand, you know, you're having some people over. You guys are going to get loud. Tuesday night, midnight on a Tuesday into a Wednesday and people are trying to sleep to go to work and things like that? No. Your party is too loud. That's ridiculous.
That's a noise complaint.
That's ignorant. Stop it.
Yep.
So.
Other big thing. Let me just throw this out there.
Sure.
The way people treat people in the service industry, the way they treat people who wait tables, the way they treat people who make coffee, who deliver pizza, who do whatever. But the people who are so bitter and small and dissatisfied with their life and just take their opportunity to finally be in feel like they're in charge of someone and can rip into them and cut them down and mistreat them and stiff them and all this crap, it drives me bonkers.
I bet it does.
Drives me bonkers when I'm out in public and I see the way people treat each other. Because you know what? Like, you're no better than that person making your coffee or delivering your pizza or waiting your table. Like, that's their profession. That's their industry. That's their job.
That's what they make money
for. Doesn't give you a license to run roughshod over them.
All right. What is a useless fact that you know?
Most of them.
Completely useless fact. I would say a lot of facts that I know that is completely useless. If you ever looked at a zipper, it's got YKK on it.
Mm-hmm.
The letters YKK. That's actually a Japanese name. Yoshido, Yogo, Koshida, Kogan, or something like that, which is that has to do with the individual who designed it originally in the first place.
There
so most zippers always have the YKK on it.
YKK?
Something like that.
Aren't there only like two companies that make zippers?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's...
So what's your useless fact?
Oh, my goodness. Give me a subject.
Mortal Kombat.
Mortal Kombat. I know two of the designers' names are hidden as character names. Like, it's their names backwards. There's something in the first game like that. I know the Super Nintendo version was generally thought poorly of because they replaced all the blood with gray sweat.
Yeah.
And that's looked at as the reason that Sega Genesis actually surged.
True. That's very true. That's why Sega Genesis became the hot thing to have.
Absolutely, because of Mortal Kombat.
Video game specific.
Also, that was one of Mortal Kombat and NBA Jam, which I want to say are 94, were the last great arcade games, because that, you know, that kind of signified the point where the cartridge games
started to be on the same level as,
and it's really
quality wise.
When you look back, like, they didn't nearly equal, but they were a close proximity.
Dude, NBA
so,
Jam on the Super Nintendo was very close in graphic style to the arcade.
Right. I mean, if you really A-beat them,
funny
the arcade
that
is.
I have the NBA
quality.
Jam for the Wii that I was playing the other day.
Really?
Just to emulate the Spurs versus the Heat.
Brick wall. Boom shakalaka. But that killed the, you know, just as the arcade industry kind of killed the pinball industry, those last games being ported to Super Nintendo and Genesis, I feel like kind of killed the arcade industry.
What is the best documentary that you've ever watched?
Oh, that's so tough.
I would have to say, on my list of documentaries that I've watched, the best documentary that I've ever seen, the one that just really gripped me, really enthralled me, I enjoyed the hell out of it, was probably King of Kong.
That's a great movie.
The video game movie about the guy who's chasing the whole Donkey Kong world record. That one really was really well done, very entertaining to watch, and... I just, you know, it's because of the nostalgia aspect, because I grew up playing Donkey Kong in the arcades, so I know what it felt like to see those old video arcades and when they would show the old mall arcade stuff. We've talked about the arcades and all that. Mm. Like, it was very nostalgic for me. It was kind of a trip down memory lane. Really, really, really good one. The Smartest Guys in the Room, the Enron story, the story of Enron failing, that was a really well-done documentary, too. I really enjoyed that one, and I thought it was top-notch. So those are my two favorite documentaries I've ever seen. What about you?
Oh, it's hard to pick just one. I will say the most moving, emotionally, documentary is Dear Zachary. I don't even want to spoil anything about it, but I think you can watch it on Netflix, Dear Zachary.
Okay.
It is the saddest, most enraging documentary I've ever
seen.
Bully
was pretty good, too. Bully wasn't too bad.
I've not seen that yet.
Bully's the new one that just came out last year. It's not bad, actually. It's one of those movies like that that's very emotionally charged to where you want to punch somebody.
Also, I think a great movie to watch if you ever want to have a serious discussion about capital punishment. There is a documentary called The Thin Blue Line, which is astounding. And it's a classic documentary. I think it's from 88, but it's still astounding.
Now, there was one that I recently saw. I really liked it. I'll throw it out there. It's something interesting. It's called Bones Brigade. It's the story of Tony Hawk and all those guys as young skaters coming up in the 1980s. Him, Rob Roscoe, Tony Avila, all those big dogs that ended up having like famous skateboards named after them and all that. Christian Hosoi, all that. So that was a really cool documentary, you know, because they're talking about the Bones Brigade, the original Bones Brigade, who was in the Bones Brigade, how they got to where they are, how successful they are, the infighting that happened at times. You know, it was a really unique documentary about a time period that I was just a kid loving skateboarding, riding on skateboards and riding bikes, not knowing that these stories and these things were going on that were actually creating the popularity that I was enjoying. So that was kind of a rude awakening for me.
I'm also still a fan of the Michael Moore films. Some of his more recent ones, Capitalism, Sicko.
I really liked Bowling for Columbine. I thought Bowling for Columbine really was a great movie.
I think if you go back to his
didn't
first
like Roger
one,
and Me, and Roger them. And I didn't Me, like those.
I think I don't know. I think if you go back
Sicko
and watch that now,
Sicko was good.
If you go back and watch Roger and Me now, I think it'll seem very astute and very forward looking.
Oh yeah, the biggest knock on Roger is the fact that they always say that he kind of plays with his editing style to take things out of context. But the real truth is that. Yeah, you can say that. You could say that he's taking things out of context, but he's leaving in full sections of 20 to 30 seconds of video at times, and you're getting to hear the lead-up statement to the statement that he wants to focus on, and then, like, you know, a paragraph after that statement that the person said, and then he focuses back on the middle section of it. So you get a pretty decent context of what's said before, the thing he wants you to focus on, and then what's said after. So it's not really pulled out of context all that much. These people said those things, you know? Like, when they're always talking about in Sicko, they're talking about the fact that everybody's big knock is Canadian healthcare is horrible, your long wait times and this, that, and the other. So he's sitting up in the room, if you remember, he's sitting up in the room, the waiting room in Windsor, Canada, which is right on the other side of Detroit, Michigan. And he's talking to the people and they're like, oh no, we love it, we're fine, you know, we're cool, like it's not long wait times, you know. And he's sitting there with his mom and dad, and they you know, they come in, he's got a clock running in the bottom of the corner of the screen, and within 10 minutes they got to go in and see their doctor, and it was nothing, nowhere near what everybody makes it out to be.
And you know what, a funny political argument in this country that, hey, you know what, maybe Canada isn't absolutely 100% of the time totally perfect, so we should stay with this system that is beyond refute, astoundingly broken and corrupt. You know, like, we can't try to fix our system at all because, you know, someone in Canada may have had an imperfect experience.
True.
You know what? Like, most everyone in America all the time has a pretty terrible experience with healthcare.
All right. Last question before we get out of here on the show.
Okay.
Why doesn't society allow dueling between consenting adults where two individuals enter into a verbal agreement to fight to the death without fear of being charged with murder? I don't know if... Well, first off, would you think that, like, if they passed that law, where would you stand on that? If they were like, hey, if two people verbally agree and there's a witness or two witnesses that sign off on it that says that they verbally agree to this fight, to the death, and then they fight and one of them dies because it's a fight to the death, how would you feel about that personally, Justin?
I don't think that's a good thing to have in our law. It sounds silly to me, really.
You like, really think it sounds that silly? Because I think that there's a lot of people that would actually take people up on that.
Well,
obviously, there would have to be a mutual agreement between the two parties. You couldn't just say, hey, I want to fight you to the death and then start fighting them. You know, there would have to be a mutual agreement.
A gentleman's, and we'll walk 10 paces and turn around and shoot at each other.
There would have to be a mutual agreement so that these people know that they're entering into a situation that could potentially end their life. At that point, that's on them.
We've moved into the realm of human understanding and self-awareness where we understand that violence doesn't always resolve things, you know, and that, you know, it's not like, so, you know, the right person always wins a gun battle. You know, it's not like the person who's right, it won't, if you're having an argument and you resort to a duel, You know, if you and I are arguing on the show and we get mad at each other and I say, oh, let's duel, you know, and you shoot me, doesn't mean your point was valid and my point was invalid. It just means you shot me
well,
first
no, no,
and
no.
I'm dead.
I think that now you're adding a different level to it. You're taking it away from the general understanding that these two people just are in a disagreement to a level where they don't like each other as people and they just want to fight. And whoever wins, wins. And it's not even about what the purpose was of what got them to where they're at. They've actually decided to take that step over and go, you know.
Well, but that's a factor because you don't get there without that.
You really think so?
Yeah. I mean, like, well, all right, what we talked about on the show, that mother who let her 4-month-old daughter get raped and killed.
Right.
Yeah, I'd love that, you know, if it was like, all right, I want
to
have a duel with you.
There has to be a mutual decision.
And she goes, okay, and we duel, and she, you know, shoots me dead. And it's like, okay, well, you guys said you duel. Like, it's just, it's silly. It's dumb. It's not, it's, you know, it's a backward looking, you know, the fact is we don't want to be a barbaric society.
Fair enough. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for us here on the Q Overtime 127. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to check out Justin at Dimofo on Twitter.
And Instagram.
D-E-Y-E.
D-E-Y-E-M-O-F-O.
That's right.
And Mark, thanks for having me back on the show.
No problem. You can come on every single week if you want to. Ladies and gentlemen, I think we're going to go to the Waffle House. You want to meet me at the Waffle House?
Always.
All right. Always. We'll see you guys next time on the Q.